This is a story about a normal family Christmas, except that it's about my family, and my family is Southern, which is a strange gene pool, but not one that you can do anything about, no matter how much you sometimes may want to, or they may want you to, because they sometimes feel the same way about you that you do about them. This is a night 20 years ago, and it was late, and my old mother and I were wrapping presents for my daughter, Whitney. Mother was 75 and had just, and I was 45 and Whitney was 10 and she was asleep upstairs. Mother had just been widowed and I had just been divorced and had just stopped drinking, which meant I parted company with two of the great traditions of the South, drinking and marrying women. And so it was kind of a tender time, and just Mother and I in the dining room of our old house wrapping presents about midnight. It was Christmas Eve when the phone rang, and the hospital emergency room was calling, and we were, you know, trying to carry on the traditions, and tradition in my family in that time, and this time of year meant Jesus and food and bourbon and football and children and dressing up and food and bourbon and good women and loving your family, no matter how illogical that may seem. It is the good women who hold it all together, and that meant, of course, my mother. She taught us all that life was fond and funny, and that people were good-natured and good-humored, and that we all had a bond, even though that might seem hard to keep in mind sometimes. And so she was the one who could bring Republicans and Democrats and fundamentalists and Episcopalians and Jesus freaks and atheists and drunks and teetotalers and slightly but not entirely closeted gays and football lovers and all kind of in the same family Christmas celebration and make us all feel part of a whole. It's a neat trick. It was a simple formula, sort of. Until my Aunt Louise died, and which loosened my Uncle Nicky Nat's muzzle, and he drank too much bourbon at her funeral and announced that Granddaddy had been Jewish. Which was interesting, but came as a surprise to us children because we were then in our 40s and no one had mentioned it before. When I asked my cousin Florence about it, she said, well, of course he was Jewish, and so were his brothers Irv and Mo. She would know. Florence was my oldest cousin. She was about 88, and her mother had been married to one of my granddaddy's brothers. It so exercised that she thought this is just another sign of those silly Christian traditionalists, because Florence was an atheist, and she was tough. She was the brains of the family, and she was the liberal of the family, and she was the atheist of the family, and those three things together may have been coincidental, but maybe not. And she was tough. I mean, if you were a pregnant, scared 15-year-old girl and called the local hotline in that time, you got my cousin Florence at midnight at the age of 88, and she said, don't you worry, dear, we'll take care of you. She did not necessarily mean you'll have your baby and we'll bring him to Jesus. She was prone to telling stories. She would say things like, there have been more people killed in this world in the name of religion than for any other reason in the whole course of history, which is probably true, but doesn't go down that well at the dinner table at Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so Mother tended to separate her from my father's aunts, Bessie and Carolyn, who were all about Jesus and thought the Crusades had been wonderful. Bessie and Carolyn were about 87 and 88 and had lived all their lives together except for two very brief periods when each was married in a different decade actually in a different generation, to a different man. Bessie's husband departed so soon after the ceremony that no one thereafter could remember what he looked like or what his name was or why he had married Bessie, who was a short, nervous, giggly, incompetent little woman who got squashed with age. She kind of squashed down like a toadstool, you know, or an ottoman. And she had bad clothes and a bad wig because she had bad taste, and she was broke because she couldn't hold a job. She spent most of her days in the public library because it was free. She was kind of an early bag lady. And Carolyn was more serious and dignified and taller. And she had been married later in life, not until her 50s, to a man named Raymond Smith. And she married him because he neither drank, smoked, nor swore, or probably had much intercourse, because he was 86 and died 6 months later. So Mother tried to keep Florence and Bessie and Carolyn sort of separate, and also from my bourbon-drinking uncles, the journalists and the lawyers in the family. And so she had Bessie and Carolyn for Christmas breakfast. And they would have orange juice, and we would have orange juice and vodka, which seemed to work out pretty well. And that's sort of the way it went until Bessie and Carolyn began to kind of deteriorate, and Bessie wasn't getting out of bed, and Carolyn was walking down the middle of the street. And so it shouldn't have been a surprise that the phone rang at midnight on Christmas Eve, and it was the hospital, saying that they had two older women, Bessie and Carolyn, Clinton and Smith, and they had burned the house down, and would we please come get them? And Mother got one of those blank-eyed looks that Southern women who are, you know, always responding to crisis get, and she thought, oh my God. She said, I guess we'll have to bring them home. And I thought, no. Because I had been at their house a month before. I had gone with living wills and powers of attorney, and I just wouldn't leave it, you know, until they signed them. It is not easy to persuade mostly deaf, blind, demented old ladies who don't want to sign papers they can't read and can't hear you explain that they should sign them. But if you are their only nephew and you stay all day and don't give them lunch, eventually they will sign. And so they did. And we didn't bring them home. I persuaded the hospital to keep them. And the next day I put them in a nursing home together. We stay together in my family. We always have, and they had always lived together. They were special. You know, Carolyn had been committed to the Florida State Asylum for the Insane as a religious nut when she was a young woman. If you can imagine how much of a religious nut you would have had to be in the South in the 1920s. And on the strength of that demonstration, my mother persuaded my father to make her my godmother when I was christened, thinking, we'll make her an Episcopalian godmother and that will tame her. It didn't. She just thought, Episcopalians don't go to heaven, they're not saved. And so for 45 years, she's spent all her time trying to bring me to Jesus. That was our relationship. Bessie was different. Bessie had had electroshock, which seemed to have helped her some. Though I'm not sure how, because I don't know how she was before. But in the nursing home, for the first time, she got popular because she could talk and laugh. And she started ice cream riots. She would say to the person next to her, I think I'll have some ice cream. You want vanilla? I'm going to have chocolate. Would you like some strawberry? I think we should all have some ice cream. And people started going, ice cream, ice cream, ice cream, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry. And it would get very excited for a while until they, you know, lost the thread. And then they would forget. And an hour later, she could do it all over again. It helped. It was a good, Carolyn hated it there, but she got happy. I visited her one day, and she looked happy. And I said, Carolyn, you seem, you're all smiles. And she said, I am. I've married that nice young doctor who's been looking in on me to take care of me. I said, that's wonderful. Do you both live here together? And she said, no, we've moved to North Carolina. When Carolyn died, mother and I put her in a plot next to my father, who was already dead. And he probably wouldn't have liked it that much. He didn't like her that much for all the reasons I've given already. But that's the way she wanted it, and she didn't have a plot of her own. Mother was very hospitable. When Aunt Bessie died, she was broke, of course, and I was kind of broke, and Mother was kind of broke, and I didn't see any point in renting a tent, you know, and all those silly folding chairs and grave diggers to dig a hole when she didn't have any friends anyway. And so we had her cremated, and I bought a red rubber bucket and a green watering can and took her out to... half of her, actually, out to the cemetery, to Myrtle Hill, and poured her around my father and sprinkled her in. While the grounds crew sucked on their sodas and watched. Seemed fitting to me, and when Cousin Florence died, in a nursing home, her ashes were going to be put in a pottery bed or something over in Pinellas County in St. Pete. No one would ever go to see her, so I asked her executor for the ashes, and so I got those ashes, and I got some of Bessie's ashes, and when Mother died, we had her cremated, and so Mother is now, well, Florence is in a box behind a bust of her that her husband Louis did. It looks very handsome, and Bessie's in a coffee can. She loved coffee, and it was cheap, and she's behind the head of a Greek man I found on an island in the northern Sporades. He's the best looking man she'll ever have, and and my mother's in her favorite casserole dish. My half-assed godmother, the Emmy Fish, who was Jewish and who would have been my godmother except that she was German-Jewish, is in there now, too, in the shelves. Mother persuaded her to become Episcopalian so she could be my sister's godmother afterward, but they never liked each other. And when she died, her husband didn't want her ashes, and so I have her, too. And Whitney has now moved here, which is wonderful. She's 29. It's been 20 years, and for the first time, we'll have Christmas together. She's not going to go to Florida, where her mother is. She was there not so long ago. So we'll all be together again, Whitney and Florence and Bessie and Mother and me. Family, just like always.